Welcome to Are We Enlightened Yet? Where Mercury has officially gone retrograde. So,
yes,
how are you, Sid?
I'm good. I'm fine, honestly. I'm slow today. Like, my thoughts just are not matching up with anything. I don't know. You can probably tell by my intro right now.
Like, there's just a lag and
just slow. But you know what? We're gonna push through this and we're gonna have a great episode today because I'm really excited about our topic. But
yeah,
before we get there, how are you?
I am honestly depleted. I feel so tired, and I don't know if that's actually, it's just because I was sick. Then I had a tooth emergency. And then, yeah, I had a dental procedure, and it was a busy week. And it was a good week, and I'm good, but I just feel like the come down this weekend is here, as Mercury is in retrograde. We're about to have a full moon in Cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm just feeling it. And then in the feels.
Yeah, I feel that. Like, once, like, January, like, starts to get going, it's... I don't know. I love January mostly because it's my birth month, but yeah. I go so hard those first few weeks of January, and then it starts to taper off, and I feel that depletion energy that you're feeling too, because it's just, you've been going so hard, and especially if you're recovering from a sickness, it's like, it's so easy to run out of our resources.
Yeah, and then forget that you're still recovering, right? Like, you're just like, oh, I didn't wake up and feel like total garbage today. I must be better.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes your body time to bounce back from things, especially because over the last 2 years, most of us haven't been sick. So our immune systems are kind of taking a hard hit if you're catching anything right now. You know, it takes a little bit longer because they haven't really had to work in the last 2 years. So.
That's what I noticed like a month ago when I did get sick. Usually, it was a cold. Like, it was a really bad cold. And usually when I get colds, it's like 3 days and I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I bounce back really quick.
Yeah, this one took you out.
This one took me the fuck out. Like, it was 2.5 weeks. And even still, like, near the end of that, when I was feeling better, like, physically, see, this is where the slowness is coming in, you guys.
You can't even form that thought. You were unwell.
I was still coughing, and, like, I still had a sore throat. There we go. Back online, folks. But, yeah, it really took a long time, and I noticed that, in my yoga practice, where it was just, like, I felt so weak after because I did nothing during that 2 weeks, and I hate feeling weak, and it's tempting to just jump right back into your normal routine.
Totally. It is, and I think that is kind of what I ended up, you know, like, this would have been a really great recovery week, but I don't just hate the dent. I'm fucking terrified of the dentist, so I had, like, a full-on panic attack in the dentist chair, was sobbing through the procedure, which is so taxing on the body to begin with.
Yeah.
And I was just getting over an illness, right? So then, like, your body didn't have much left to give. So that's probably why I'm tired, even though I want to just be like, no, it's the moon. probably a whole host of things.
A lot of factors, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. We're good. We're going to have a good episode, like you said. But we just want to be... I'm just going to be honest when you ask how we are.
Yeah, I'm slow when you're tired.
And I'm tired. And I think for me, January... winter finally hits.
Yeah.
You know, like, November's nice, but it's dark. December is dark. And then January comes and it's fucking cold and it's dark and it's the middle of winter. And you're like, oh, we have months left of this. Like, even though, like...
Because winter just, officially started in mid-December. So it's like, we still have 3.5 months of this.
And then, you know, like, obviously we had a cold snap. And then for anyone who's not in Alberta, we get Chinooks here. So we really shouldn't whine. But, like... January is just a tough month. It's just long.
I love it and hate it.
I like February because it's short.
Yeah.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
So, all right, should we get into it today?
Let's do it.
We're actually going to talk about a subject that we love to talk about, was actually recommended to us by a friend. We're going to talk about fear and kind of how that's our views on it. And the kind of the saying of like, it's so popular in the wellness world, the spiritual world, it's that feel the fear and do it anyway. I personally have a love-hate with that saying. I feel like it can be really dogmatic, if that's the right word, where it's just like, you have to be able to face every single fear you have. And if you don't, you're a failure. Like, it doesn't matter how terrified you are, you're not going to be successful if you don't face your fears. When in reality, sometimes we don't have the tools to deal with what's going to happen after we face that fear. Like, some fears come from wounding and some fears come from trauma. And so if you don't have the tools or the support, it's like jumping off a cliff without being able to swim. Mm-hmm. And I used to be the queen of that. I would just like white knuckle my fucking life and just be like, force myself to face all of these things, which in the end was, you know, great. I've benefited from it. But the amount of rewounding I did to myself, the belittling I did to myself, the days I spent in like almost like a constant anxiety attack, because for those who don't know, I have complex PTSD. So like when I talk about being triggered, I talk about like emotional flashbacks, like PTSD responses. So when I can face fears, I may not know that I'm about to actually throw myself into an emotional flashback, which is like, can be really intense for me. And it's taken me a long time to be like, hey, you know, maybe that's not, it's not always the answer, which I think is why I have such an issue with that face your fear, you know, feel it and do it anyway, like override your nervous system response is not always the answer for me. I really love the saying messy action, because it feels doable. Yeah. It's like one baby step. You don't have to face the fear. You just have to put one toe in the water.
Yeah.
And then maybe your foot, then maybe the other foot, you know, like I think, and that's it for me. I think I've had a really different relationship with fear. I think it's really important to face. I think it's really important to honor your body and know the difference between a fear that needs to be faced and a fear that is going to do more damage should you jump off the cliff.
Yeah. Like kind of going back to how you were explaining how it, like rewounding our triggers and stuff. I think that's the damage with that saying of feel the fear and do it anyways, because it puts so much pressure to like place yourself in that fearful state for the sake of growth. But if it's premature, like you most likely, if you're forcing yourself to face your fear, you probably don't have the tools and like the know-how to navigate that experience effectively, like to come out of the other side unscathed and like genuinely like growing from it. Like, yeah, of course we all have, every experience is valuable and every experience is a teacher, but I think in the spiritual and wellness world there is so much pressure to just go through that process so fast and so quick, just so that we can say that we did it and that we came out the other side conquering our fears. But that's not the case. Like you said, it's rewounding us and it's re-triggering those things, and fears really do, a lot of our fears have legitimacy, and we need to honor that. And so that's the big thing with fears. We can't just deny that they're there and push forward for the sake of growth. Totally.
And the thing is when you face a fear before it's you're really ready to face it, you're not creating proof that it's you can do it, because you feel like you can't after, because you've had such an emotional response to it, or you've had such a physical response to it, or something has happened that, you know, it wasn't actually a rewarding outcome. And now you're creating evidence that like facing your fears continues to be really scary. But when, like for me, especially with anxiety, I think a lot of people do it, I often have to tell myself and remind myself like, well, you didn't die. Like, see, you didn't die.
Yeah.
Like, and like, not in a negative way, to be like, look, like this, like panic you had, it worked out just fine. You're okay. But when you jump the gun before you're ready, you don't have the opportunity to do it. Right. Like, you're now just creating the story that it's always really, really hard to face a fear, when sometimes it's not. Like, you get that anxiety, you panic, you're talking through with your friends a little bit, you know, you're terrified, maybe you lose a little bit of sleep, but then once you do it, it's like relief. You're like, oh my God, I did it.
It's like the fear was worse than the thing itself.
Yes.
There's a difference between things that are actually like insanely triggering and unsafe for us, or just like those kind of like everyday anxieties that we have. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's that, you know, like, we know there's different types of fears. Like, obviously we have phobias, which are very, can be very irrational. There's all different, like, there's all different types. How do you, other than, like, I know you said it goes back to, like, the wounding, but how do you, what's your relationship with the field of fear? Do it anyway, what does it bring up for you?
I mean, I personally kind of used that saying as a coping mechanism a lot. Like, it was my way of chasing after my growth, and it was and it was how I kind of stepped into those hard moments when I was faced with, like, either a trigger or just a moment of discomfort. It was like my way of, like, okay, like, feel the fear, like, yeah, it's there, but let's just do it anyway, let's not let it hold me back. So I think the saying on its own is, it can be really supportive to an extent, and it's more so our relationship to it and how we're using it. But there's only so much that we can step into fear without, like I said, like we've been saying, is there's only so much we can do without re-triggering the wound and making it worse for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I really like the concept of it, but I think, like you said, messy action is a more, almost like safer way to approach fear. And it allows you to kind of tread it more lightly and to not put so much pressure on yourself to do the thing.
Yeah. I feel like you can't fail then. Yeah. But when it's like, just feel fear and do it anyway, then you feel like you can fail at it. And it, yeah, it's just in the wellness world, in the spiritual world, we're just like so forceful about things. And then if you feel like you can't do it, like we talked about boundaries, where we're like, oh, this is a lifelong thing where it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing, right? They make it seem like it's supposed to just be something that you check off and then move on with your life. And it's not a forever process, but it is a forever process. You're always going to come up against fears that are small and really big and really challenging, or maybe easy. And that, like, feel the fear and do it anyway makes you feel like you have to conquer it once, I think, you know. And I don't know if that's the intention, but I think as humans, that's what the story we tell ourselves and put in our brain.
Like, when we hear that, there's like this expectation that, okay, once I do it, then that fear will no longer be a drawback for me. It won't hold me back anymore. But it's like, no, fear is always going to show up in our lives, like, regardless of how far we are on our personal journeys. Like, fear is going to be a constant. It's just how we respond to it, and it's how we navigate those moments of feeling the fear.
Yeah. And again, like, fear, when we've talked about it, it's so many different things, right? Yeah. You have fear, which can come from wounding, and that fear of rejection, fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. But then you have phobias. Mm-hmm. And then you have anxiety, which is kind of tends to be a general fear, or it can be around certain things, right?
It's like a future-based fear.
Yeah, like with social anxiety, like, I would always explain it as like, oh, I'm scared of humans. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because it's a fear-based thing. I'm afraid of something. Mm. That's what anxiety is, right? And sometimes we can pinpoint it, sometimes we can't. So I think, again, that, like, feel the fear and do it anyway. We're not able to look at fear differently, but it is so different in so many areas of life. Mm. You know, like, with the rejection and abandonment and all of that, shocking. That comes down to, like, your worth and your ability to think you're deserving of love or success or happiness or any of that, right? You're afraid that if you, if somebody rejects you, that, like, then you're no longer deserving or worthy or wanted, because that's the story. We put our worth in other people, but then if they leave, they get to take our worth with them, and that's not how it works. Yeah. But that's why we're so afraid of it, right? But then you have phobias, and I have friends that have genuine phobias that, like, they just berate themselves. I do it too. I'm sure you do it, where you're just like, why can't I face this? Mm. But it's because it's something so deep in there where your body is like, no.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any phobias. No? I actually don't even know anyone Spiders? With phobias. No. Like,
oh, really?
I used to be, like, really afraid of spiders, but,
got over it.
I
felt the fear.
I felt the fear and I did it anyway. No, but it was actually, it's kind of like a funny story. It was totally like an exposure therapy, but not intentional. It just happened. But me and my friends went to this music festival. I think it was like 2017. And we slept in our tent, and we had the habit of just leaving our tent open. And so we went to bed one night, and the inside of the tent was just crawling.
Oh, no.
Crawling with spiders. And if you have phobias, I'm so sorry about this visual.
Oh, this was rude.
There was
that was a rude story.
Sorry, I should have did, like, a trigger warning. Yeah. Anyways, spiders everywhere. And
we don't have those on this podcast.
We didn't give a fuck. We slept with the spiders.
Oh, no.
We just slept with them, and I remember, like, just, like, laying on my back and looking up on top of the tent, and you know how you can, like, see that, like, the bugs outside of the tent? They were on the inside of the
tent. I feel like we're taking this story too far.
Anyways.
I'm literally
so
dying.
That's why I'm not afraid of spiders anymore, because I went through that experience. Long story short.
I don't even have a phobia, but I really hate them. And, like, I just have... And if you have a story, there's absolutely no need to tell me it right now. But I just have this, like... And nobody... This isn't an invite to tell me anything ever. I will cut you out of my life. I have this, like, freak... I don't want to call it a phobia, because it's really not, but, like... fear of, like, bugs getting in my ears, like a spider going in my ear, or like a moth.
Okay,
because I know somebody it happened to. And okay, enough, like, I freak myself out, so, like, you telling me about spiders, okay. Like,
yeah,
I'm starting to sweat.
Yeah, okay. Topic change.
Sidetrack back to
anyways, yeah, phobia, a type of fear. And then there's, yeah, of course, the typical fears of abandonment, rejection, fear of death. I feel like that's not a lot of people are willing to face their mortality.
And, like, that's existential. There's a lot of people now out there that are, like, death doulas.
What is that?
So a death doula apparently is somebody who you can go to that will help bring you to the basically bring you to terms with the fact that life ends. Right? And it's supposed to actually be a really rewarding spiritual experience, because I don't think you particularly see them when you yourself are dying, but I'm sure they get a lot of people who, like, they've been given, you know, like, terminal cancer or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually somebody who can, like, basically walk you kind of through the experience of death, so you can, like, come to terms with it, which I think would be really kind of a neat experience.
Yeah.
Because it's not something... Like, I'm not afraid of death, but I also don't, like, think about it.
Yeah. I feel like I've, like, lightly pondered my death, but not to the extent of, like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like, I think sometimes this, I think, like, ends. Yeah. Oh, we're all gonna die one day.
It's kind of just like a, huh. Yeah.
It's like a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, but I think if I were to sit and think about it too much, then I would definitely create, like, an existential life crisis of, like, I haven't done enough. I haven't lived enough to die.
It's one of those things, the more you think about it, the more debilitating it can get. Yeah.
But then you have, like, I think public speaking is a higher on the phobia list than death actually is. Yeah. I have a public speaking phobia, actually. That's very triggering. That is actually how my entire, like, diagnosis with mental health, my mental health journey started.
I
was public speaking.
Wow. How old were you?
It triggered me so bad.
When that 22.
And I didn't want to face my fear, but I had to, because I was in nutrition school. And yeah, and it was like, there's my life before and my life after that moment, actually. That's how triggering and not ready I was to face that fear of standing in front of people.
Did you have to give, like, presentations or anything? Like, how did you come across, like...
I've always known. So, in elementary school, junior high, high school, I didn't public speak. I always just had to do it in front of my teacher, because, like, it was such a strong... body experience. I actually remember in grade 12, like, my grade 10 and 11 teacher were awesome. They didn't make me do it, but my grade 12 teacher basically told me, like, if you don't public speak, you're gonna fail grade 12 English. And I was like, okay. It was at the beginning of the semester. We're getting towards the end of the semester and it's starting to come up, and I am literally like, I think I didn't know I was having a panic attack, because I was hiding in my room. I didn't know what was happening, but, like, I was hyperventilating. I couldn't stop, like, oh my God, it was the craziest experience. My mom had to give me, like, 3 Ativans to calm me down. It was insane.
Wow. Yeah.
And so finally when I went to school the next day, my eyes were so swollen. I couldn't see out of them because I had been crying so hard. And I basically told my teacher, like, fail me. Like, I can't do it.
Like, I'll take the L.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I was joking.
What?
I was like, is this... I was like, fuck you.
Oh my God.
I was like, it wasn't like a... So then when I went and actually just like had to present him, like I would still just cry in front of... Like I would just cry when it was one-on-one. That happened to me the whole time. Like I would just sob standing in front of people reading. So it's always been a fear. So then when I was in nutrition school, it was actually just like... I just had convinced myself that suddenly that I could do it. But then the day it came up, I was like, I was hyperventilating. I was like sweating through my clothes. Wow. I was freaking out. I got up. I did it. I read my paper. Didn't look up once. And then, yeah, the rest is kind of for another podcast episode. And then actually for my oral exam, we had to have one to do in front of the boards. I had to get special permission to sit and only do it in front of the dean of our school because I was like, I can't do it. Yeah. Like, I can't do it. Damn. But it's because I was never ready. It's crazy because I've actually done things now that are public speaking events, right? Like, I've hosted workshops with girls. I've been asked to do talks at workshops, like camps and stuff like that. Like, I've done it because I was ready to do it. I was passionate about the subject. It wasn't really in front of my peers because they're kids. I probably still couldn't public speak in front of my peers. Maybe. I don't want to say never. But, yeah, so, like, that's an example of, like, I wasn't ready. I overwrote it. It was life-altering for me. And then, and not in a bad way. Like, it did change my life in a better way, but it was very, it was interesting. And then now, like, a little more ready. You know, like, it's not that... So when you have those big moments of, like, fear that you're truly not ready to face, it doesn't mean that you're never going to be able to face it.
Yeah.
It means you're not ready right now.
Exactly.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't always force yourself to your edge.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go too far past your growth zone that, like, there's no growth there because it's damaging.
Yeah. But even then, like, even if you do kind of tread that line and push past that comfort zone prematurely, that's still like a learning experience in and of absolutely. Itself. Yeah,
absolutely. That's the thing. Like, I think that whole experience was positive for me in the end. It was very hard on me in the moment, you know?
Yeah.
Would I have liked it to happen that way? No. Do I know that it needed to happen that way because it set motion for a very specific direction of my life? Yes.
And it also kind of like shows you, like, okay, you went through this really triggering, scary experience and you're still alive.
100%.
You didn't die.
I didn't die. Like, that's that evidence, right? Yeah. I didn't die there. So yes, so, like, you have phobias, I think, that like can be very, and we can be really hard on ourselves with phobias, I think, because in our minds, we're like, this is irrational. It is stupid that I'm this afraid.
It can be so debilitating. Yeah,
yeah, but it's real. Yeah. Like, it's, those phobias for people are just, they can't explain why they're that afraid. It doesn't seem to matter, like, how much they go to therapy or even if they do exposure therapy. Like, there are some phobias that people just can't get over. And I just want people to be kind to themselves in those situations because you're not doing anything wrong.
Some of those fears are like fucking like ingrained in the DNA.
Yes.
And there's nothing that you can change about that. And that's, and that's completely fine.
So stop forcing it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not something that's working for you to try and keep facing it, like you're finding it more challenging than it needs to be, give yourself some grace, you know? For like rejection though, like, I don't know, how do you find that shows up in maybe your own life but in other people's? Like, what would be your guiding kind of that, how do you work past that fear of rejection or abandonment or that kind of those those like fears that come from wounding and conditioning and kind of just like how we grow up in society, really?
I mean, like, one fear that comes up through conditioning is actually the fear of failure for me. And it's the fear of like social humiliation. And I actually have like an instance where, okay, this is going to be a funny story. And I feel like I've told this story to so many people. So I apologize if this is like your third time hearing it. But when I was younger, I would like bike around with like all the guys, like in my elementary school. And so that was what we'd do in our spare time, was like go for bike rides. And so it was like me, and then I would usually be the only girl, and then I just watch the guys hit the jumps and whatever, and I'd be like the little cheerleader on the sidelines. And then one day, my one friend, he's like, okay, like, you gotta hit the jump, like, we're gonna go to the Shell Hill and you're gonna hit the jump. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, all day in school I was like so nervous and so afraid of like, I'm gonna wipe out, I'm gonna make a fool of myself in front of my friends. And and I just looked, I like admired my guy friends too. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, they were like big brothers to me, and I loved them. And so eventually after school came, and I was like,
I was gonna make a really inappropriate joke and I'm not gonna make it, but I want everyone to know that I was thinking
okay.
about it.
Okay.
Moving on. It just like literally I was like, say something.
Anyways, so the moment comes, it's after school, and I'm like shaking with like anxiety and fear and just like anticipation, like, oh my god, it's the time, I'm gonna hit the jump finally. And so we bike ride to the spot, and then my one friend sticks me on his like big BMX bike that's like two times too big for me. And then he puts his big BMX helmet on me, which is like a little too big too. So it's like wobbling all around. I can barely see. And then they go down to the bottom of the hill, and they're all waiting for me. They're all watching. And two of them have their phones out
and
recording.
To get a visual, like, Sid, for those that don't know Sid, like, you're not a large human now.
I'm tiny.
Like, yeah, you're short.
I am so a small human.
So I can only imagine how tiny you actually were in grade 5 to a grade 5 boy.
Oh, probably like 3.5 feet, 4 feet. Like, yeah. Tiny, tiny. And so he sticks me on like this adult sized bike. I can barely hit like reach the pedals. And so I'm on this thing at the top of the hill watching them with their phones. And I'm just shaking. And I'm like talking myself up like, Sid, you got this. And this was me like facing that fear, because I have this fear of failure and humiliation. And honestly, this is honestly probably where it stemmed from, this moment. And so I was just so scared. But I was like, I have to do this. I can't let them down. I can't let myself down. And so then I start going down the hill. I'm not even pedaling. I'm just like, I just start going down the hill, and it's loose gravel, right? So I'm just like bouncing everywhere. And then I go and hit the jump. I don't move. I don't like lift the bike up or anything. I just hit it, and I'm like still in the air, and it's like slow motion. And then everything just like blanks out. And then the front tire hits the inner lip of the landing, and I just like roll and like eat shit, and everything's like and I'm like, oh my god, like, no. And I look over at them, and they're like, you know when you're laughing so hard there's no sound coming out, like, that's they were laughing so hard, and they were like, I can't believe I just fucking witnessed that. And then like my one friend runs over, and he's like, oh my god, like, you bit my handlebars. And like, I just felt like, you know, you go, oh my god, I was so embarrassed and so like, fuck my life. But really funny looking back at it. But that was just like, that's like a perfect example of
conditioning and wounding.
Of wounding. Yes. When I take that risk, if I do something that I'm afraid of, and if I fail, it's going to be humiliating, and it's going to be the worst thing in the world. Like, that's what I learned from that experience, essentially. But again, it was a learning experience,
right.
And I survived, and it's a funny story to look back
on
now.
It is, but really what it probably actually created you in it is shame.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it's not, like, so often we use the words, like, humiliation, embarrassment, when really what happened is it's created shame in us.
Mm.
And, like, that's where that fear comes from, because it's shame-based, right? Because we all have those stories where you're like, that was embarrassing, but let me tell you this funny story that happened to me shortly after it happened, right? But when you're just like, actually, I know that wounding came from this, you're like, yeah, because I felt ashamed of myself. Mm. Like, I felt shame there.
Yeah.
There's such a, I think... And it's, I don't know if it's just shame, not in your particular situation, but when it comes to just general shame, again, I think it's shame around our humanness. Like, I feel shame that I failed what was supposed to be my cookie cutter life, this perfection. Mm-hmm. I feel ashamed at the fact that, like, you know, my life doesn't look how I thought it was. You know what I mean?
Like, you like perceive yourself as, like, incapable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're just there. And, of course, I'm blanking on so many other ways we can feel shame. But, like, for you, that would be a moment where it's, like, now when I try and I am not successful at it. Because my thing is there's really no failure. There's just feedback.
Mm.
Like, you get feedback when things don't go well, and then you can adjust your sails.
Yeah.
But that's not how our brains tend, like, to always operate until we train them. But as a kid... you're just mortified.
Yeah.
Right? And then you put that in the bucket of evidence that every time I try and I don't succeed, I'm going to be mortified.
It creates a program, and that program mm-hmm. lives in the subconscious.
Yeah.
Subconscious. And then that program, if not kind of like looked at later on in life, like that's on a feedback loop in your life. Yeah. And you perceive certain things, scenarios that fit into that mm-hmm. certain dynamic mm-hmm. through that lens.
Mm-hmm. And then again, like with wounding, whether that's abandonment, rejection, the abandonment and rejection wounds can start as a like newborn baby, right? From like 0 to 7, so much of it is parenting. And like, not saying anything against parents, like there's so much that you're really not in control of. It really depends on that each individual baby, right? But like wounding can start that young for people,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then again, like abandonment and rejection, failure. You then have a bunch of kids trying to date as adolescents. And like some boy tells you that he doesn't think you're pretty or he doesn't want to date you. Or I've had like somebody paid one of the gay students in junior high money to ask me out, which like is funny now, but was horrible to find out in junior high. Right.
Yeah,
like, but that all creates wounding and conditioning that like, oh, when I get rejected, this happens. If I get rejected or I feel abandoned or I feel like I failed, it solidifies the story of X, Y, and Z that I tell about myself.
Oh, that's a really good point with like those adolescent relationships, because when you're at that age, you have no healthy communication skills. You have nothing in the tool bag to help you have a healthy, nurturing, supportive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like when you're in these relationships at that age, it's like, they do nothing but wounding most of the time.
Oh, 100%.
And it's like we take those wounds with us, and we take those as our truths within our relationships. And it's so hard to detach from that without the awareness.
Because it completely breaks your trust with yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because you're putting all of yourself in other people. You're just looking at outside sources to validate you constantly, right? Because you have no idea how to validate yourself. Even as adults, how do we struggle with
what the fuck does that mean?
Internal validation, right? Yeah. And so it's just this constant need for external validation. But every time it goes wrong, instead of just being like, oh, I'm going to get curious about that feeling. Oh, I'm going to look at that. We're like, oh, that's a check mark in the box that I fucking suck. Mm-hmm. Like, and then the next thing happens and you're like, that's a check mark in the box that I fucking suck and nobody wants me. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not skinny enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not athletic enough.
That's how the brain operates. Like we have these beliefs and we scan our environment constantly looking for information that validates those beliefs.
Right.
And if we don't change those beliefs, we don't change how we perceive life.
And then you start getting really small
and
you start playing it really safe because you're so terrified of getting hurt. It's human. That's human. And then you try to start, and then that's where that fear comes from, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid of it hurting. You're afraid of being embarrassed. You're afraid of feeling shame. So you just play it safe.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's where facing fear is so fucking important in the journey, and knowing that you're like, yes, you know what? I'm going to face this and it might go completely wrong, but I trust myself to get me through it.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough trust in myself that I can process and I can cope and I can manage and I can come out the other side no matter what happens. And I think that's the difference between being ready to face fear and when you're not, is you have to have the trust in yourself to face whatever happens afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that if it doesn't go right, you're going to berate yourself or you're going to have a negative outcome because you don't have the tools and trust in yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Facing fear is fucking important.
Yeah.
I don't want, like, it is, but there's also a line, right? Because some of that wounding that happens in adolescence, childhood, all of that can be really deep and actually can be quite activating to the nervous system, right? It's not always just like a laughable thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is really deep wounding.
Yeah.
And you don't even know it until you're trying to go face a fear and suddenly you're like paralyzed by it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, this is stupid. Why do I feel like this? Why can't I like just fucking do it? Everyone else can fucking do it.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, yeah, because something happened where your body... You're not responding to the now moment. You're responding to the moment that your brain is linking it to as a child, right? Where it's like, oh, I did something similar 7 years ago and this happened. I'm never letting that happen again. Mm-hmm. So now as an adult, you think that that's what's going to happen, even though you like rationally can't put the pieces together.
But they're somehow associated.
Yes, that's the programming happening, yeah. Right? So it's like you have to build the trust and rework the programming that you're on your own side and you can say to yourself, hey, yeah, like I know that really hurt when that happened, but I'm an adult now and mm-hmm. I have the tools to get me through it. If this happens, it doesn't mean this. You know, if so-and-so decides that they no longer want to be with me, it doesn't mean that I'm unworthy of love. Or, you know, if I get fired from my job, or if I want to move across country and then I move across country and it doesn't go well, it doesn't mean X, Y, and Z. It just means I tried something and it didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's kind of like where the benefit of being an adult now is we can look back at those experiences mm-hmm. and perceive them through a different lens and lend understanding to our younger self who felt so much shame or humiliation mm-hmm. or fear in those moments. We can kind of go back, and this is kind of where like the work of like inner child comes in, where like you can reparent yourself in those moments and be like, hey, like that's okay that you failed. This is just a learning experience. This doesn't say anything about who you are as a person or what you're capable of in the future. This was just a learning experience. Mm-hmm. This is information that you get to take with you moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's just, yeah, that's kind of part of the work is going through that process and reframing these past experiences so they aren't so debilitating when we come up with, when we are faced with those moments that are similar, like in energy or mm-hmm. whatever. And yeah, I think just in that respect, like trust is essential and just the self-awareness.
Yeah. And knowing, I think trying to get in tune with what different kinds of fear feel like in your body, mm. right? There is a difference between, I can tell now, and it's taken work, like years of it, to be able to tell the difference between a fear I am ready to face and a fear I am not.
Mm. So how do you differentiate?
So like for me, the fear that I'm ready to face just feels kind of like anxiety. It's intense. It's maybe nervous energy. I might lose some sleep. I might have a lot of really overthinking thoughts. Like it's like your typical fear, but like when I have a fear that is like a hell no, every inch of my body feels dread. Like mm. there is nothing in me that I can convince to do it. Like there's no reward. I've just had to realize that like that, it's like heavy. It's like sand in my body. And I cry mm. like at the drop of a hat and I can't figure out why. And it's like, okay, because I am not ready yet mm. for that. And then I usually take that to my therapist and I'm like, so this is happening. We work through it. And then if I can get to a point where I can work past it, awesome. But I give myself the grace to not push past it, mm. right? Because that's my body sign saying, hard stop. We're not going here.
It's great that you have that awareness. Mm-hmm. You can kind of like, yeah, label those experiences of like, oh, is this a workable fear? Or is this something that I need to kind of put a pin for later?
Yeah. Mm. Totally. Do you have a way to tell the difference for you?
So when fear shows up for me, same as you, it's like a very like visceral body experience. When it comes to like social relationships, it's weird. My like left hip always like gets super tense, and that's like my I don't even know. That's
tell.
It's like my tell. It's like as if something isn't meant for me to like dive deeper into, or if it's like really, if it's creating a lot of discomfort in my hip sometimes, or just like anxiety in general, I'm usually pretty gentle with myself. And sometimes it's just the fear, that fear reaction of just kind of like pulling back and kind of retreating back into my safe space. But that's just, I've learned to honor those feelings when they come up and like not force myself, push it past it, because yeah, I've had those experiences where I felt that anxiety and I felt that like insane discomfort, and I kind of went forward through it anyway, and I ignored those feelings, and it didn't go so great. Again, mm-hmm. a learning experience still, but I don't know, I just retreat a little bit, and that might just be like my wounded response, but I don't know, fear is something that I don't want to abuse that awareness and like use the fear just to like again, feel the fear and do it anyway, just for the sake
like
of growth.
Like you said, chasing your growth.
Yeah, I don't want to chase my growth. I want to be really intentional about the things that I do pursue and that I do lean into. And if it's like that activating for me, that's like that's my body telling me like, no, this is this is something that you can deal with later. Then I honor that.
And I think we have to remember, and what we're trying to say is, when that happens, start working on the things to get you to facing the fear. Yeah. We're not saying, like, oh, if your body reacts, don't face it.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, like, that's a sign that it's not right now. There's work to be done.
Yeah.
Right? There's some things to look at. There's some honoring to be done. Because at the end of the day, if you've faced your fear and it hasn't wasn't relieving after, it was, it like you said, it didn't go in your favor. And not because things didn't work out, but because you then had a more visceral reaction, created more wounding. That's not the outcome you want, right? And I understand life happens and sometimes that happens, but usually you can tell in your body if it's because you pushed too hard too fast.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just such like an intuitive response. You have to know your body. You have to you have to pay attention to the subtle signs that your body's trying to give you. And so with me, it's like, yeah, having the awareness of what my body's trying to tell me in that moment, and then acknowledging the fear, acknowledging what it's like guiding me to notice, and then take that back into my personal practices like journaling and getting curious about it. And then once I have that clarity surrounding that, it's the building of the small steps, those small little doable action steps that you can to tackle that fear in the future. It's not necessarily putting it or shoving it under the rug and ignoring, denying that fear is there. It's developing a relationship with fear. It's being open to fear when it presents itself and not being so afraid of fear to like completely shut it out from your awareness, but it's taking that with you into your practice and learning to work with it to grow in that more intentional, gentle
way. Because the thing is, growth happens when you do shit that scares you. That is where growth really happens the most, because then you're kind of like amazed by yourself. You're like, oh my god, I'm the best. Look what I did. I'm so proud of me. Right? Like, growth happens when you face fears. But growth can happen by also not facing them too, right? So I, you know, you kind of just have to figure it out.
It's more so how you approach it, and everyone will have their own unique approach. Like some people, if your approach in dealing with fear is just jumping into the fire and getting burned and learning from that experience and moving forward, great, that's awesome for you. But other people, it's a more gentle experience where it's just like taking note of fears and then learning how to navigate them in small ways. It's so unique.
And you're never getting rid of fear.
Yeah.
The idea that we just need to just transmute fear, that it can't exist in our world, unrealistic. It's literally not going to happen, right? So I think building a more positive relationship with fear is what's needed, but that positive relationship is not getting rid of fear. Like, I have worked through so many fears, as have you, I am very sure. Oh, they just keep showing up.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
It's part of the human experience. Just, and
there's always going to be things that terrify you, because I think, like, we're all afraid of getting hurt. We're afraid of some type of pain, whether that's emotional, physical, mental, whatever. We're afraid of looking, like, there's so, and so not everyone's afraid of looking stupid, but they're afraid of whatever.
Being misjudged, misperceived.
Like, there's just always something that comes up where you're a little bit afraid to put yourself out there. And if you're a person that's like, I'm never afraid to put myself out there, awesome, you're afraid of something. Like, fear exists in everybody. And I think it's really easy to look at people doing stuff that seem to you seems terrifying, and they're making it look so easy that you don't know that they're not afraid. You know what I mean? I think it's really easy to assume that other people doing stuff means that they're not afraid, that it's not hard for them, it's not vulnerable for them. But it is.
That's a good point, because we all have our masks, and we all want to appear strong and unbreakable. And so when we're going through things that are afraid, that are fearful to us or triggering, we are really skilled at making it look like it's not affecting us at all. Like, we could be internally screaming, but on the outside appear completely calm and natural. So don't take things for face value when people are doing things that are scary to you, it's probably scary to them too.
Yeah. Or like, if somebody says like, oh, you must have been terrified, people were so dismissive. No, it was fine. Yeah. When really you're like, oh, I was absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
You know, we're just really dismissive as humans. Like, it's like, we don't want to let anybody too far in.
Yeah.
You know, or to admit that we're human.
We just want to appear stronger and like,
yeah.
Has
there been anything lately then for you that feels like, hey, I really faced a fear there?
Honestly, starting this podcast.
Yes. Okay. Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think I mentioned it on one of our podcasts before, one of our episodes, is I was wanting to start a podcast for like a while. And just the thought of doing it alone was really scary to me. Cause I was like, there's just so many factors that could have this fail, and I don't want to go through that alone. And you know, like, it was just, there was a lot of failure in the, or fear of failure in there. And that was holding me back from doing this. But then, yeah, when you brought it up that you wanted to start a podcast, and it just felt right in that moment. Still, there was some anxiety, but it was just like one of those moments where it was like, this just feels like something I'm meant to step into right now, because I'm ready to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. So this for me was also like the night before our first episode drop, I wanted to text you and be like, pull the plug. We're not doing this.
Just kidding.
Who the hell thought we could do this? This, like, absolutely not. Like, for me, the fear with... is if I can write, I can sound more eloquent, and I can perfectly edit what I need to say so it can be taken in exactly the way that I want it to be taken, and like, I can articulate myself perfectly. Verbally, I struggle, or like verbally, like that, my throat chakra, it's just seized right up. Like, I just have a hard time feeling confident in how I articulate myself verbally.
Yeah.
And then inviting people to hear that. It can be perceived wrong. I'm a people pleaser. So the fear for me was like, what if I say something that hurts somebody? They take it the wrong way. It's not how I meant it. Like, that's so much of my fear for me. I think around the podcast is people listening, and we don't get to control how people perceive what we're saying, or if we have an episode that's a little off because we're still learning and like the flow just didn't go, we don't get to control that. And that terrifies me to not be in control.
Like, no, I'm with you there with like the throat chakra piece, because I've always been one to write really well, and like, even like texting my friends, like I'm a great texter when like we're in like that flow conversation, but like in person I tend to have less to say, just because it takes more energy and mental processing to verbalize my thoughts as eloquently as I would be in text or just like writing form. And so just like doing this so the whole world can hear you, it's just, it's terrifying, because for me, I don't want to be perceived as like stupid or like dumb. That's my thing. That's like my wounding of like, I don't want people to think that I'm like incompetent or whatever, because that's just fucking wounding.
See, when I think like, I don't want people to think I'm mean. Like, I'm really,
because you are more like direct, and
it's so funny because I'm so sensitive that I don't know where I get off being as direct as
but, like,
I am.
Your talking style is, like, it's hard-hitting.
It's just is what it is. Like, that's just very much who I am. But, like, but I think because of that, I'm so terrified of being people thinking I'm being mean, when really I'm coming from the most loving place. Would be devastated, truly devastated, if I ever found out I hurt somebody. Like, it makes me sick to my stomach even thinking about it now. So that, for me, I think is it. And then I choke up on my words. And it's always something that I love them, but my friends used to bug me about a lot, and I realized that it created a story in me that like, I can't articulate myself properly, like that I'm I don't really care if people think I'm stupid, but that I sound stupid. You know what I mean? Like, that I don't know, there's just something with how I use my pronunciate and like say words and stuff like that that makes me insecure. That people are gonna be like, you're an idiot.
And you know, I think it's just weird. Like, such a vulnerable thing alone, just speaking your thoughts and your feelings, and for the whole world for it to be open for the whole world to judge that, it's like,
yeah, and make it mean whatever they want it to mean.
Yeah,
we're not in control.
We're not in control,
right? So I think that's definitely a fear both you and I have faced, but it's another one where we just felt it and we're like, the timing's right. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Let's see what happens.
Let's feel the fear and do it anyway. Feel the fear
and do it anyway, team. And here we are. So, yeah, I think that's like a, I think that's a good ending.
Yeah,
you know, I don't have any more hard-hitting and wise words to tell you yeah. about what I feel about fear.
Yeah, I think the take-home point is, like, to know that you're human and that fear is always going to be a part mm-hmm. of the process, and to just tread lightly or jump into the fire, whatever works for you,
face it, you'll grow. Mm-hmm. You'll grow no matter what. It's your, figure out your style, you know, even if that means you have to sit down and meditate if that's your thing, or, like, journal or talk to a mirror. Start asking yourself some questions about fear. How does fear show up in my life? When I feel that, what does my body feel? Mm-hmm. Start asking yourself those questions if you haven't explored fear in that way before, mm-hmm. so that you can figure out how it shows up in your life. Because it shows up in everybody's life different. And we don't really talk about it.
Yeah. And we all have our own unique relationship with fear.
Yeah.
So just get curious.
That's it. Yeah. Get curious.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well,
thanks everyone.
Thank you guys for tuning in as always. We appreciate you.
Like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. I know Sid says do whatever you want, but don't. 5 stars only, fam. Share with your friends. Thank you for the love.
See you guys next time.